Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. Every week, we dive deep with economic development professionals on leadership and other issues challenging our industry. Our goal is to equip listeners with the knowledge to grow their impact and influence. You are America's Jobs Team, and when you get stronger, communities thrive.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast. I'm so excited to be here today. You know, as we look at the America's Jobs Team, it was intentional that it wasn't the United States Jobs Team. When we talk about the Americas, we mean the Americas. We mean from, you know, the northernmost territories of Canada to the southernmost territories of South America. And representing our neighbors to the north, at least north of where I'm at, not very far north, Stan Silverman. So, Dan, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ron. Pleasure.
So I will butcher it. So share with us what your title and role is in Invest Quebec.
Sure. I will give you the English version for you. I'm the Vice President of Foreign Direct Investment, Invest Quebec. We have a division within Invest Quebec called Invest Quebec International, which encompasses my team, which is Foreign Direct Investment and Talent Attraction and Immigration. And then there's another team, which is Trade and Export.
So talent attraction is directly tied with jobs attraction?
Yeah, so great example is our president of our division and our minister of economy was traveling in the center region of Quebec 2 weeks ago. And a lot of the discussion wasn't about necessarily about reinvestment or expansion. It was about talent attraction. We need to get more talent. And again, this is in the center region of the province. We need more talent to come here. And part of our role is to help them source that talent from within the province, but also from around the world. So from other provinces, from the United States, from other markets internationally. It's all pulled together as part of the global skills strategy of the federal government, which allows for quite easy access. So we could have a visa and somebody in market in an emergency case in 48 hours, but overall in about 10 business days, have a full-time employee come in from, let's call it India, working within a company. And this is Canada-wide, in Canada and in Quebec in 10 business days. So it's a pretty quick turnaround compared to what you see in other parts of the world.
That's an amazing strategy. It may be the norm in Canada, but, you know, I've talked to, you know, literally hundreds of economic developers, and I don't know anyone using immigration as a strategy tied so directly. I think it's got to be really gratifying to know you have one more tool in your toolbox to solve a company's problems.
It's extremely gratifying. It's also been an advantage for us because you have seen in the United States, H-1B visas not be renewed for people that are there and they have to go elsewhere. So companies have looked north as an opportunity. I spoke with an AI executive out of California, and she was just telling us about how she lost one of her recruits from China that she spent 2 years trying to get to California to their company. And I said, well, why didn't you just put them in one of your Canadian offices? And she goes, what are you talking about? And I explained to her the global skills strategy and how we could help with that. And she made all the connections for her, gave her the information that she needed, also introduced her to an immigration consultant. And probably within 3.5 weeks, she sent me an email saying that he was looking for apartments in Canada and bags were packed and were relocating back as an employee of the company. So it's a huge advantage to us. It shows, number one, it's an open immigration policy, but number two, it makes us an ideal location for people to come and look at because we allow them to not only grow the talent base that's here, but bring in external talent to complement it.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And that wasn't, you know, something we talked about, but I think it's just one of those great tools that I didn't know existed. So first question we always try to ask, and now it'll be our second question, is how'd you get into economic development? What does your career path look like?
I didn't try. A few people know this. I kind of fall into a pattern with very few people in the economic development industry, and namely, it's Jason Hickey and Janet Aidy. where our fathers were in the economic development industry. And my father was a corporate site selector from, I would venture to say, the early or late 80s, early 90s, and some degree involved in economic development, and growing up working for him in the summers and kind of saying, this isn't something I want to do. And dad, what you do is boring. And I'm going to go and be a police officer and go to school to be a police officer. And when I grew up, you know, working for my dad part time, but also didn't really enjoy the, you know, prefer to have that father-son relationship rather than the working relationship. So when I graduated, instead of continuing and going on with CAI, my dad's former business partner at the time, Steve Jass at ROI, offered me what he says was a 3-month summer job that turned into a 12-year career with ROI. So, you know, my career started really kind of just doing some junior consulting and helping out at CAI. And when I joined ROI, I stayed there for 12 years, starting on the phones, doing lead generation and cold calling and looking at economic development strategies and investment attraction strategies, to eventually coming into more of a sales role and a management role and a consulting role, and even to the point of representing economic development agencies in other markets. And in 2017, I took a chance and I joined Toronto Global as Executive Vice President of Investment Attraction, managing their regional economic development FDI team. And I stayed there for 3 years. And then I had the opportunity to come home. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people get to necessarily do economic development and foreign direct investment for where they grew up. A lot of people tend to move around. And this was an incredible opportunity to join Invest Quebec, team of about 50 FDI professionals here in my team. We have directly 12 international offices and 33 in our Quebec delegation office. So it was kind of an opportunity that I couldn't turn down to, number one, come home, and number two, take on a bit of a different role that included talent attraction and immigration. So that's kind of been my career path along the way. But like I said, it wasn't a 3-month summer job turned into a almost 20-year career in economic development so far.
That's awesome. I love that. And I knew the story, but just hearing you talk about it and gives me hope as a father of a daughter who I think would be an incredible economic developer and who would be forced to do free internships while she was in college. Whereas I keep hoping I'm going to get her to come back, but maybe there's hope still.
There is.
So, you know, I love economic developers. I think they're the hope of the world. We have the ability to truly change communities and places. And to do that, we've got to lift up leaders. We've got to create and support great leaders. You know, 2020 so far, certainly been the toughest leadership year of my life, between the economic issues, the social change issues, the anxiety around behaviors in the U.S. We have this miserable, awful election going on. And it's not partisan. Both parties would tell you it's miserable and awful. But what have you learned, your leadership? How's it been informed? You've got team members, you know, working distance, you know, all working digitally. You know, Catherine's on the call with us today. And her background is different than yours, so I know you're not in the same place today. How has this informed your leadership journey? And what have you learned that you think is going to make you a better leader in the future?
A great question, Ron. I think, so just to give you some background, I started at the end of January at Invest Quebec. And originally what the plan was to do all my one-on-ones with all the staff and then visit each one of the 12 main international offices. I got to two. I got to Atlanta and I got to New York. And then we got put in quarantine right after that. So I spent roughly about 3-4 weeks, I would say, in the office before we've been shut down. And you had a certain plan going in. I knew I wanted to do a restructure. I knew I wanted to make some changes into how we're operating. And that included the management and the professional level. But what it did is it gave me an additional challenge. I got to meet everybody locally in person. I didn't get to meet everybody else in person. I have not met Catherine in person, to be honest with you, yet. you know, Invest Quebec is about 1,000 employees overall in all the other divisions. We're a financing corporation as well. So I've met everyone on the executive team in person and not much more beyond that. So what it's done is it's challenged us to think differently. As a leader, it's challenged me to operate a little bit differently than I would in the past. I could get up from my desk and go around and talk to every single person. It's a little bit more difficult to do that over Zoom or Teams or whatnot. So I've had to find ways to be more engaged with the team, make sure I'm more involved in client files, and make sure I spend more time listening to them and more time having them be part of things. So an example I give is, you know, our objectives are essentially set by the province of Quebec every year. And I sat down with my team of about 6 managers and I said, here's our end objective. Let's work it out together about what these objectives are going to be for each one of your teams. Taking a bit of a different approach and letting people be more involved in things. It's forced us, and I think it's forced everybody to, you know, the 9-to-5 has never really existed in economic development. And for those people that think it is, and it's a government job, it's not. But, you know, my schedule today, for instance, is back to back to back every half an hour, 45 minutes. But if I don't do that, I can't get around to everybody. So it's helped me learn to manage my time a little bit better, manage my staff's time a little bit better. What's important for a meeting versus what's important for an email. But I haven't done this on my own. I've leaned on a lot of people for advice on how they're doing this. And people from Europe, from the US, just the network I've built over the years, because it's not something that you could just think of doing. And it's not like I've managed 12 international offices in the past. So it's been a great experience from a leadership perspective. It's made me be a little bit more fine-tuned into what is it I expect from each one of my managers and from there on each one of my employees. And what is it that I could do for the leadership team above me and our senior VPs, our presidents, and our CEO globally?
A great answer. And I think a lot of people share that and need to hear and the validation that we're all kind of going through this. The scale may change, but the anxiety and the good leadership all stay the same. You know, one of the questions we ask, it really isn't a fair question, but I get to ask it, is if we were going to go back 10 years, what would be the things that you would tell yourself to learn, to do, to go deep on that would serve you better today than where you are? You know, so for me, my word this year was mastery. And I realized that over the last 4 or 5 years, we have such a great team that in a lot of cases, I don't have to know how to do things anymore. That I have somebody, I don't have to know how to make the Excel spreadsheets dance. I have people who are amazing at setting that up. But it got me a little worried and thought, you know what, that's how people get old, is forgetting how to do things and not mastering them. So what are we going to go? So this was the year of mastery. And it was about those things I wanted to go back to relearn. But when I look at, you know, 10 years ago, I probably would have told myself to learn to better manage my own calendar, because the pressure on it's just going to get greater and greater and greater with technology, and you're going to get overwhelmed. You know, I just had to do a data dump of emails that there was just no way. There were 1,600 emails. There was not a chance in the world I could read those. None. And so I just deleted them all and thought, if it's really important, it'll rise back up. So to me, it would be better at mastering time and be smarter about that. Are there things you'd go back and teach yourself or that you'd learn?
Definitely. I mean, that's yours is a great example, by the way. I mean, for me, I think part of it is what 2020 has taught us, if not anything, is that tomorrow is not given. And, you know, we hear that before. We've heard that in the past. We've always heard that. But 2020 has really been a representation of it. So for me, one of the things when I look back is, you know, I'm a bit of an extrovert, but at the same time, I haven't always been. And I thought, you know, to myself that, you know, because tomorrow is not given, you have to go and take that chance. You have to go and do that thing. And that could be anything simple from me being at a conference and seeing somebody that I wanted to go talk to because I was in business development or I'm looking to recruit companies, but was too shy to make that initiative. But also there's so many things that I've seen in the last 10 years on the economic development side that I wish I was a 10 on 10 at, but I'm probably a 6 on 10. Economic development financing of a project, how does that work? And it's very different here in Canada than it is in the US. But taking opportunities that I could have had in the past that I didn't take. So I was always a little bit too reserved to make that jump necessarily to do that. And I think part of what I would go back and tell myself 10 years ago is you only got one chance at it. And you have to make the most out of it, because if you don't, I don't regret anything. But, you know, you could say you don't regret anything, but if there's 15 things on your bucket list that you didn't do that you had the opportunity to do within those 10 years, you got to jump on it. And from a career perspective, you know, yes, I wish I would have gone to one of the schools in the South and taken the master's program in economic development. And it's not too late. I could still do it. I probably will do it. But there are just things that I feel that I could have pushed myself to do a little bit more. And again, 2020 is kind of, you know, everyone can't wait for it to be over. But at the same time, you know, you got to count and bless every day that you have and use it to the most.
No, I couldn't agree more on that. You know, that idea of take advantage of the opportunities and know that they multiply in the future. Ken, when we look at leadership in a COVID era, who's the person you look to and say, a person was a really amazing leader, and here's why I admire them for what they led on?
Great question. Somebody I probably speak to quite frequently about things and get advice on stuff. There's actually quite a few people, but one in particular would be Kenny McDonald of One Columbus, and you know, being the board chair of IEDC and also the CEO of One Columbus. He's somebody that I've always kind of stayed close to, asked for advice with, become a great personal friend. But you know, the way Kenny has and the rest of the board has helped lead IEDC through COVID, and let's be honest, IEDC is a membership-based organization where, you know, the revenues of the organization come through a lot of the training and a lot of the events. And, you know, the event in Calgary was canceled, and Dallas has been turned into a virtual event, and see how Kenny reacted to that, but how he's been involved in Columbus, whether it's just through social media or actual conversations about it, it's given me something to look at, and it's given me, you know, somebody to bounce ideas off of. There are plenty of other people I've you know, spoken quite frequently with James Chavez over COVID as well, and, you know, other people in economic development. But I think, you know, just on a different level on how corporations exist, I actually have a couple clients that have been really transformational in the way they're doing business and the way they have to do business, because they are a global company that may have 10, 20, 30, 60,000 employees, but they have to react differently. And, you know, I call myself, we're an economic development team of, you know, roughly 50 people, but, you know, it's nothing when you compare it to a giant organization that is 60,000 people. So Kenny's been somebody that I've probably leaned on, and James as well, a lot throughout my career. But, you know, the leadership and doing the virtual board retreat with IEDC, you kind of see kind of what that brought to the table and gives me ideas of where I should go. And he'll tell me if it's a terrible idea. He'll tell me if it's a great idea. Sometimes I think he tells me a terrible idea is a great idea just to see if I follow through with it. But you know, he'd definitely be one person that I think I look up to in that way, especially during the COVID period.
Yeah, and as you know, Kenny and I have been good friends for a long time. We went to, back in the old days of EDI, where you had to stay in the dorms at University of Oklahoma in August with no air conditioning. Kenny and I went through all of that together. So we've been, that's got to be 25 years ago now. So he's a great mentor and a great friend. You know, for me in that case, I have a friend, Ed Lee, who's a senior executive with McDonald's corporately. And that was that person who gave me that global perspective. Here's what's happening in places. Here's how they're handling it. Here's how it was effective. So you could see insight that you just couldn't get from the media. We just couldn't get from this kind of bias of we've got to sell you a crisis and we've got to escalate the noise so you watch us versus somebody else. And it was, I think, one of the most enlightening things that I've had in the last few years was this idea of how different knowledge exchange is when you take an international perspective. When you make
100%.
Sure hearing it from real time and real business leaders. So I've really, in the last 6 months or so, found great outlets of information. In some cases, it's McKinsey Asia or, you know, consulting firms, international side. But getting that multiple perspective, I think I got kind of lazy and was assuming, you know, that the knowledge I got was all there was. And COVID has sure shown us that there's no one place that has a single hold on the truth. And it really
I agree with you. I'm a huge believer in cross-border collaboration and COVID, no COVID. And, you know, to be able to have the opportunity and build the network, as do you, of an international network, but to talk to a commissioner for North America for Invest Victoria Australia and see what they're doing down there and see how that differs, or to talk to somebody who's working for Invest in Spain or just other parts of the US, other parts of Canada, it just gives you that very different perspective. Because, you know, if you do that knowledge sharing, like you're saying, an idea that doesn't necessarily mean an idea that worked for somebody else will work for you. But if you didn't have that idea in the first place, you don't know, you know, which road to go down necessarily.
Yeah, no, I think you're dead right. It lets you then take that idea and manifest it into a solution that you just wouldn't have thought of without that accelerant of that other idea. You know, one of my worries right now is, I'm sure you're seeing it as well, is economic developers from the smallest, most rural place to the biggest, most, you know, dynamic places are exhausted. This has been, you know, and I remember in January at our team retreat telling them that this is the worst time to be an economic developer. Unemployment rates were 3%, tax revenues were growing, companies were hiring. It was kind of boring. And so I told them we're going to find ways to have impact. And then COVID hits and we're in the, you know, fight of our lives to save businesses and deal with a lot of federal and state programs that we had to get moved into our business community. And so one of the things we've been focusing on with our own team and with the 400 or so people that are in our association with Consultant Connect is this idea of taking care of yourself. And, you know, you can't plow a field with a dull plow. You can't lead if you're exhausted. The most important tool your organization has is its people. And you got to make sure those tools are sharp. But how do you in your own life make sure that your leadership, your energy, your physical body, how are you making sure that you stay healthy? And what are those practices that the listeners can learn from?
Well, I'll say I've roughly put on a COVID-19 pounds easily, as everyone else has. But I think part of it is when you work from home, and as you can probably tell, I'm at home right now, you got to find time for yourself. And especially I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old who are home up until last week, my 6-year-old. But you got to find time to disconnect from your phone and disconnect from your computer and kind of recharge the batteries. I'm not built that way. I'm not wired that way. I'm wired to always be on my phone and always be on my computer and always selling, hunting, and going out and getting things. But if you don't have that break, you're going to hit a wall. And you know what? You're probably going to hit a wall at the most inopportune time. And I can't hit that wall when, you know, my CEO invites me into a meeting with our premier. So I think for myself, it's part of, you know, making sure you still have some type of a morning routine, making sure you have some type of a disconnect. And whether that is that time that you were going to drive to the office and back is your time to go for a walk or your time to be active or just your time to be with your family and your phone is off or on silent. On the other side, too, you got to keep the job exciting. And economic developers across the globe transition their role throughout the highest points of COVID to almost being sourcers for sourcing PPE. But sourcing PPE is yes, I 100% agree it's a part of economic development, but you want to get back to what you were doing, and that was working with your existing businesses and making sure people have jobs and going out and attracting foreign direct investment. So I think for myself, I've tried to keep it that I have the opportunity that every day is going to be a little bit different. I know I'm going to have a few of the same meetings over the course of the week because we are within a pandemic. But what are things that, how are blocks of times in my schedule going to be different from one day to another, and ensuring with my team that things are happening a little bit different? We're opening the door now to meeting with foreign subsidiaries that are based here in Quebec and having a social distance meeting. I'm going next week to tour an industrial park. And, you know, the plan is everybody in their personal vehicles on their cell phone, and that's the tour of the industrial park. So how can we do things a little bit different that just get us out of our day-to-day? Because unless you're a person that is used to working from home all day, I'm not. And, you know, I call them my interns, my kids, because they crash, and I'm surprised she hasn't done it yet, but they crash every meeting. You just got to find that difference. And, you know, if I don't take those breaks, my team's not going to take those breaks. So you got to find that happy balance with everything. And our leadership has been great. They want you to take the breaks. They want you to take vacation. They want you to have that disconnect. And, you know, I took a week vacation. I did a couple calls, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, it depends who it is. But I think at the same time, you know, you got to do what makes you happy. And for me, working makes me happy, but also spending time with my family makes me happy as well. So you got to find that healthy balance for you, and just know that you can't keep up that pace forever. Because as I said to you, you know, earlier, my agenda is every half hour, hour, because I no longer go for lunch and then have a 15-minute walk back to the office. I don't have that break anymore. So it's every half hour, hour on the hour, and that pulls away from that ability.
No, I think you're dead on. It's a great answer, and what we're seeing a lot of folks, but I think the jewel in that answer is if you're not the example. You know, my latest book, because I'm an author, you always have to mention your book. My latest book, we talk about PepsiCo Australia, and they call it Leaving Loudly. So the leadership team, when they go to pick up their kids, everybody knows they're picking up their kids. They're going to the gym, everybody knows they're going to the gym, because if leadership doesn't do it, then those below them won't believe, even if you tell them they're supposed to do it, they won't believe they really can do that. So this being that shining example of what needs to be, because I don't hide it on my calendar. If I'm going home because I got to meet the refrigerator repairman, it says what I'm doing. I don't hide it. I can get away with it. I'm the boss. But, you know, people know what I'm doing, because then they'll mimic those behaviors. And so I think that's
exactly my boss is the same way. When we're in the office, if it's 4:30 and you try and book a meeting with him, if he's got to pick up his kids that day, it's not happening. And it's a leadership by example. 100% agree with you.
Yeah. What's the one thing in your career that you're the most proud of?
Oh, good. Very good question. I mean, I'll be honest with you, becoming the vice president of foreign direct investment at Invest Quebec has been a real, you know, I'm really proud of that. You know, like it wasn't handed to me, you know, I had to go out and earn it, but also, you know, it was an organization I'd always thought about work. I always wanted to work for, but there was never that leadership opportunity. And I'm really proud of that opportunity. That would probably be the thing that, you know, in the United States, it's very different from Canada. We know friends and colleagues that go from one coast to the other on a regular basis. And in Canada, it's not like that. I give this comparison for Canada and the rest of the world. I think there's roughly 15,000 economic development agencies of one level or another in the United States. There's maybe 200 to 400 in Canada. So you don't see a lot of that. And, you know, so for somebody in the economic development industry to pick up from Montreal and move to Toronto, it's a big deal. And then to come back was even a bigger deal. So for me to get my family back home here to Quebec and to Montreal, you know, I was really proud of, you know, at least being thought of for that opportunity, but really excited to get that.
So the first thing is, thank you for being honest. Most people, when we ask that question, they want to talk about some esoteric deal they did and this thing. And the real thing is saying it's okay to, we call it have a ring the bell moment. And so we teach our team, it's not bragging, it's celebrating. And you should celebrate. It's an amazing accomplishment. It's something that other people in Canada are going to see and know that there is mobility. It's something that your children are going to see, that they can go out and leave the safe place they are, go experience something and come back. And the fact that you could give me a green card. If I ever, you could find a job in Canada, you know, I got that going for me. So
Exactly.
So Dan, I know you're backed up today and we're against the hard break. So man, thanks for your leadership. Thanks for your leadership on IEDC's board. It's my real pleasure to serve on that board with you. And thanks for being my friend who I can always talk rugby with. And
exactly.
And so thanks for all you do to make our profession great. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Hey everyone, I'm here today with Steve Jast, who is the president and founder of Research on Investment and Gazelle AI. Hey Steve, it's great to speak with you today. As one of the leading voices in investment attraction and lead generation, what has stuck out the most for you over the past few months?
Hi Faye, thanks so much for the question. First and foremost, let me say that I love the content that Consultant Connect has been generating. I'd also like to take a second to wish all of our listeners continued good health. Every day is really a new adventure. We're seeing some sad stories of industries and companies in steep, unexpected decline, and we're also seeing areas of growth and opportunity. A couple of areas that have generated significant strategic discussions center around supply chain and reshoring. To help economic developers blend these into their strategic plans moving forward, we've been providing complementary data pools and access to our Gazelle AI platform.
That's really awesome, Steve. I'm sure this data has helped many economic development organizations. Can you explain how exactly Gazelle AI helps?
Sure, yeah, great question, Faye. Our platform includes supply chain data for over 900 industries with related company listings. We also have complete company hierarchies, meaning users can build lists of companies that have an HQ in a specific state or country with manufacturing activities in other specific countries. This is ideal for economic recovery planning, reshoring business attraction strategies, understanding local supply chains, and overall investment attraction.
Wow, thanks, Steve. Hey, everyone, if you would like to activate your complimentary access to Gazelle AI, connect with Steve by emailing him at Steve, S-T-E-V-E, at gazelle.ai. That's Steve at gazelle.ai. Thanks for joining us for today's episode. Tune in again next week for more insight and relevant content to the issues impacting economic development today. America's Jobs Team podcast is sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.